With Tim O'Brien from the Bloomberg Campaign for President. You having fun?
I'm enjoying this. It's nice to be with all of you.
All right. Joe Biden, can he win?
I don't think Joe Biden can win. I don't think he's demonstrated yet that he has the kind of acuity or public presence around policy to convince voters that he can go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump. He also lacks Mike Bloomberg's governing experience, just in a very practical way. You know, Bloomberg's not coming to this with a bag of promises. There's a very clear and lengthy track record with him around policy that voters can look at.
Doesn't have a track record?
He's got a track record, a great and admirable track record as a public servant and a legislator. But being a legislator is completely different than running a federal government and day-to-day trying to deliver the results of policy to people in need, whether it's health care or job creation.
Vice President doesn't count?
Well, I think the vice president is a very honorable position to have in the federal government, but it's not like governing.
Tim, a lot of Democrats who have been, progressive Democrats especially, have been complaining about the role of money in politics already, are basically accusing Mayor Bloomberg of trying to buy this election, getting in late, throwing tons of money into advertising in states like Michigan to swing an election. How do you counter that argument?
Well, again, I think it's a healthy and important observation to make. The reality is, again, you can look at what Mike Bloomberg's done with his money throughout his career. He ran for mayor of New York self-funded and then proceeded, once he was in City Hall, to rewrite campaign finance laws in New York. Elizabeth Warren has proposed a 6-to-1 public funding for anyone who wants to run for public office, so money doesn't preclude people from entering a public service, which I think is a great idea. So does Mike Bloomberg. In fact, Mike Bloomberg passed a law mandating 6-to-1 public funding for candidates in New York. I think Mike Bloomberg is the candidate who can go to Washington unencumbered by special interests, unbeholden to special interests because of his resources, and actually pass laws around campaign finance that will change the course of the debate around the problems we have with money in politics and also empower a larger number of people to participate in the process.
Didn't Trump run on the same promise, though, that I'm a billionaire, I'm not going to be beholden to outside money, and I'm going to be able to drain the swamp because of that? How is Mayor Bloomberg different?
Do you really think Donald Trump is a billionaire? Or we maybe we can argue about that, but, you know.
I haven't seen the tax returns.
Yeah.
You have.
I have seen Donald Trump's tax returns, and I will just say that people should always look askance anytime Donald Trump says anything about his track record as a businessman. He's been a serial bankruptcy artist. He's not a great deal maker, and he's never had the financial resources he claims. And he didn't really self-fund his campaign. He put very little, relatively little of his own money into his campaign, and he certainly didn't drain the swamp. He just filled it with bigger alligators. You know, Mike Bloomberg could go to Washington and really shake things up.
In Michigan, do you have win numbers, you know, where you have to turn out voters the most to achieve your goals?
We sure
what
do.
Kind of financial resources you can raise from, you know, raise from where in order to show that you've got some homegrown support here?
Well, we're not going to take outside money. So we're not going to look to raise any money in the state of Michigan from outside sources. So that's just not going to be an issue for the campaign.
And when you say outside sources, you mean that Bloomberg will entirely self-fund his campaign?
This entire campaign will be self-funded by Mike Bloomberg personally, and it will not suffer for resources.
So
where do you have to turn out?
And by the way, you know, in the context of where the DNC is right now in terms of its resourcing, what's happened to just the infrastructure of the Democratic Party, Mike Bloomberg brings a lot of resources that will help Democrats across the board.
If somebody writes your campaign a check, you're going to send it back?
We are. And, you know, the people that I spoke to who worked for Mike Bloomberg when he was in City Hall, they speak about it as one of the best public service experiences of their lives because they could sit down at a table every day and talk about the best policy outcome and not have to worry about special interests overtaking the agenda or forcing them into corners they didn't want to go. And I think that that's what's going to occur in Washington.
If your guy wasn't in this race, who would you be working for?
Are you asking me personally?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would have been in this race right now, but for the fact that Mike Bloomberg entered it.
So, your primary voters basically the primary voters that you're identifying basically the same voters that you would identify to win in a general?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think the primary is going to be a very different ballgame than the general, as I think you know. So. You know, there's different constituencies I think you have to court to win the primary.
So let's start with.
But one of the things that is going on though that Democrats have to pay attention to is that is not how Trump is campaigning. Trump is essentially running a national election already, and he's in states where there are no other Democrats. I was in Pennsylvania for a week. We've got very serious resources in Pennsylvania. We are not seeing other Democratic candidates there. We're booting up here in Michigan. We're not seeing a large presence yet from other Democrats. They've got to be in these first four primary states, and there's only 4% of the delegates at stake there. And they're not there because strategically that's how you should run against Donald Trump. They're there, understandably, because that's how the primary process is constructed. But we don't have to be bound by that.
To Rick's point, you know, what target constituencies are going to make up the primary voters you're targeting?
I think
in Michigan.
I think we're going to get independents, moderate Democrats, and progressive Democrats who want to put their vote behind somebody they believe can beat Donald Trump, somebody who has governing experience and knows how to rationally finance meaningful public policy programs like health care. But also has a long and I think honorable track record around causes like climate change and gun control and immigration that are also very important to progressives in the party.
Are women key to your victory?
Sure, I think women are going to be key to any Democrat's victory. I think they should be key to any victory of anybody on any side of the aisle.
More important than men.
I think, and I'm grateful to women for this, I think women have been engaged and activated in Democratic politics recently. I think primarily because of the horror show that the Trump administration is around issues that women care about. Clearly, they were a big force in the midterms. You know, looking at where suburban votes are, that there's a strong chance the GOP may have permanently lost the suburban vote, particularly among affluent women in the suburbs, which wasn't the case in 2016.
So women are more important than men in this election?
I think women are, I think every constituency is important to court. I think women are especially interesting to court right now because they've shown that they'll show up at the voting booth, they care, and they're active in the party.
So you'd rather have a suburban woman from Oakland County than a blue-collar guy from Macomb County?
I would like to have both.
Well, can't get both.
We'll get both.
Do you think Michael Bloomberg can, even in the primary, pull in some of those Republicans from 20 years ago, like you mentioned, who might not be on board with the party of Trump at this moment?
I mean, I think for disaffected voters of either party who are concerned, I think in the Democratic Party, if they're concerned that there's going to be a lurch into programs that aren't reasonably funded, Bloomberg's their guy. I think for independents who feel at sea and don't have a home and they're disgusted with what they've witnessed in the last 3 years of the Trump administration, he's obviously somebody I think they'll be very comfortable with. And I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing the front runners right now sort of, there's a very fragmented race going on among the Democrats. And I think if voters were coalescing around what the Democratic Party should be and which candidate best represents that, you'd see a little more consistency in where the polling is. But we could end up coming out of these first four states with a different winner in every state.
I'd just like to talk a moment about this whole, when it gets talked about, it's, the female vote gets pushed into one corner like there is a female voter that everyone's going to go for. When you're talking about that, what do you mean?
I mean any female voter who cares about, I think, first and foremost, character and civility in government. I think any female voter who wants a health care solution that provides reasonable, affordable health care for her family and for herself. I think a female voter who wants workplace empowerment and wants to rid society of some of the arbitrary distinctions that have kept people apart from one another. I think that's a broad group, and I think there are some umbrella issues that connect women of different classes or different races to one another. But I also know that there's obviously distinctions within that population.
Why did Mr. Trump sue you?
Mr. Trump sued me because he didn't like that I wrote the truth about his track record as a businessman and a public figure. He cooperated at length with me for the book I wrote. I spent a great deal of time. We flew around the country together. I was in his homes with him. He called me often two or three times a week. I think I probably spent more time with him than any other reporter personally. But he didn't like what the book said about his life and times. But the book was accurate. He tried to take it to a court to say it wasn't. He got embarrassed in court, and the case got tossed out.
So what did you learn about him with all that time with him? Is he a good guy?
Well, I don't think now. I don't look at Donald Trump and think of him as a good man. I think Donald Trump is a dangerous force in American society, and he's really undermining things that should hold us together, even if we have reasonable disagreements. He's lawless, and he's corrupt, and he's been running the longest con in American history. First in the 1980s and 1990s on investors, bankers, and his own workers, and then in the early 2000s as a reality TV star where he pretended to be a successful entrepreneur that he wasn't, and now is president of the United States.
You didn't know that when you were spending all this time with him?
I was curious about why somebody like Donald Trump had such traction in so many different theaters of American life for so long, and why people kept attaching a lot of belief to who he said he was and what he said he had done. I first became exposed to Trump in 1990. I was a research assistant on the first biography written of him then. I'm a kid from the Midwest. I didn't really even know who Donald Trump really was when I signed up on that book. And then over the following years as a reporter, I got to know him much better. I think every New Yorker who's watched Donald Trump engage in this theater of, he's a performance artist at his core. He's not a great businessman. He's not a public servant. He's someone who thrives on being at center stage, and he will do ruthless or really despicable things just to stay at center stage. And that's a problem for the country.
Tim, as a former journalist, I want to ask you about the decision at Bloomberg News to basically divorce itself from investigations of candidates in the Democratic primary, at least.
Yep.
And Mayor Bloomberg's comments that journalists who work for him just have to understand that there are going to be parameters to the work they do, such as that. What do you make of that personally?
Well, I think, first off, I think some of the original reporting around this was inaccurate and misrepresented how the policy was made at Bloomberg.
Okay.
Mike Bloomberg told the commentary side of the organization and the news side of the organization that they could pursue their jobs in any way that they thought best, and he left it at that. It was no more complex than that. And I know because I was on the commentary side of the organization before I moved over. So those were the marching orders. The newsroom landed on the policy it did at the guidance of John Micklethwaite, who's the editor-in-chief, and you'd have to ask him specifically about why he arrived there. I wasn't on the news side.
You didn't agree with it, though, did you?
I think each side of the organization had to figure out for itself what it thought was best, and I wasn't in the newsroom, so I'm not going to comment on it.
Well, if you had been in the newsroom, would you have followed the policy?
I'm just not going to comment on where they ended up on this one.
Why are you smiling?
Because I think you're a very good journalist, and I'm glad that you're grilling me on this one, but I'm not going to answer that question.
That's an NC, right? No comment.
No comment.
How did you weasel your way in with Trump to get him to trust you?
I would never call it weaseling my way in. But, I think I benefited from the fact at the time I was at the New York Times. And I don't think it had anything to do with me or who I am. I think he's spent a lifetime trying to court the New York Times. You know, one of the interesting things about Trump is he courts some of the forces in society he claims to loathe. He was an outer borough developer who hated and sort of spoke down about prominent Manhattan developers, but he longed to be accepted by that community and approved by them. He's always inveighed against the New York Times, but he also saw the New York Times as sort of a good housekeeping seal of approval on who he is. He's always claimed that he didn't like high society and the GOP and snobby rich people, but he chose to move to Palm Beach, and he chose to run as a Republican for president. I think I benefited from Trump's desire to court the New York Times, and he spent a lot of time with me around that.
Do I owe you an apology for the weasel comment?
You don't owe me an apology. I was joking.
Okay.
I didn't take offense.
Regardless of how you burrowed into that, what do you know about Donald Trump that you think that has not been part of what gets played out when we talk about campaigns and coverage and stuff like that?
I mean, so much of it has become known over the last 3 years. I was really stunned during the 2015 and 2016 campaigning seasons, the extent to which the media gave him a free pass on so many of his claims about who he is and what he's accomplished in life. I think some of that was a function of a couple of big factors. I think Trump racialized the 2016 contest. I think he's a profound and deep racist, and he had no trouble reminding voters that there was a black president who preceded him, that there was a yellow peril coming in from China, and that the southern border might get overrun by immigrants. He has absolutely no sense of decency or authentic sympathy around issues of immigration and race, because I think he's a bigot and a racist. I also think, you know, the uncertainty that average folks in America felt in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, where they lost mortgages, they lost pensions, they lost their jobs, and big institutions, in both parties, both political parties, the media, big business, overlooked those people. And Trump came to them saying, I've got solutions for your problems. When he's never been solution-oriented in his whole life, he doesn't read. He's very enumerate. He's not good at math. He lacks patience to get into the detail of things. And he lacks real compassion or empathy for other people. And none of that is anything you want in a public servant.
If he's so bad at it, why are we in the longest economic expansion in U.S. history, at least going back as long as this stuff has been measured?
Because Barack Obama, after the financial crisis, instituted a number of shrewd policies in conjunction with the Federal Reserve that not only got the economy back on its feet, but created an environment so businesses could thrive again. Donald Trump had this much to do with that. The only thing right now you can put at Donald Trump's corner that you could say is a direct result of his presidency is a very frothy stock market. And I think he's increased investors' enthusiasm for where the markets might go. Markets should go up in the long run. They're a bad barometer in the short term. Right now, wage growth in the United States is the same as where it was during the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. GDP growth is the same where it was during the Obama administration. Donald Trump had nothing to do with establishing the foundations that American
workers...
And I know
that wage growth is one of the things that's scaring economic forecasters the most, and you know, including here in Michigan.
And as it should, and not just the forecasters, but average folks who are working, it took a long time for working-class Americans and middle-class Americans to partake in the rebound that began in 2009 or so. Wage growth didn't really come back until the first quarter of this year. There was a decade in which average people did not see their wages go up. And they've started to soften again. So you've had about three quarters of wage growth, and it's softening again. And I think that's because Donald Trump hasn't actually instituted a single policy that's going to benefit working class Americans and average Americans and the middle class in the long run.
Mr. O'Brien,
and now I want to circle back
around. We got to get out. Okay.
We
got another. No. Don't apologize. Okay. But in your heart of hearts, you believe your guy is going to win this thing.
In my heart of hearts, I believe this guy's going to win this thing, and I don't think it's only because I want to believe it. I think he'd be the best guy to run the country, and I think he's the only guy in the field right now that could beat Donald Trump in a general election.
Mr. O'Brien, thanks for
Thank
showing
you,
up. You changed your schedule to do this. We appreciate that, sir.
I'm happy to be here.
All right,
Thank
catch you.
You
later.